Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday,
November 8th, 2014.
And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. It's going to be a doozy.
Due to technical difficulties, we now join Soundbites already in progress.
Sorry, go ahead.
They are putting out this this product that you put in the center of your room. It's connected to the internet. It's powered up, and it is... I saw the video. It's about the size of like a Pringles tube.
Yep.
And it's black. It looks very, very nice, very modern. And it listens for you to ask it questions, and then it goes and researches them and comes back and gives you the answer. This is interesting. It also allows you to add things to a shopping list. And when you think about Amazon, you think about buying things. So a shopping list doesn't seem too out of character for Jeff Bezos and his ilk to try and foist upon us.
Right.
So he's always looking for ways to enhance the shopping list. But it looks like it's a really interesting home automation step. I don't think it's the end-all be-all, but I think it's an interesting move towards a fully connected home.
Yep, it looks like a real nice toy.
Yeah, people are asking it things that you would typically ask in the Apple world. We would ask Siri, like how many teaspoons are in a tablespoon, or this video that they have where the dad is doing a lot of dad-splaining, as I like to say.
Right.
he's explaining all the different features of the product. He asks, how tall is Mount Everest? In this video, it's a little contrived. He runs in, out of breath almost, and stands up against the doorway and says, I guess they've named it, apparently, and says, Alexa, how tall is Mount Everest? Like, suddenly he was in some backyard argument with the neighbor and needed to know. I don't understand how this request for knowledge came about, but it was interesting that he was able to ask that from across the room. Alexa was able to hear this and look it up and respond back almost instantly.
Yep. And they're all doing that now. Gary Busey does an ad for a different Amazon product. I want to say the Amazon Fire, but I don't think that's what it is. And it's a set-top box that includes Netflix and all that blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Google also has one called the Nexus Player. I ordered mine. I haven't gotten it yet.
Neat.
We'll see who gets to my house first, my Nexus Player or Greenlight.
Right.
And it does much the same thing. It has that thing, you push the button and say, okay, Google, and off it goes. And I don't know if it does it without using the remote. I know that if I set up my laptop or my Chromebook or my desktop and leave it on the Google home page, I can say, okay, Google, and it pops up. And I can ask it questions.
Right. Yeah, we've got the same thing, Apple World, with Hey Siri. So
yep.
As long as your iOS device is plugged into power,
right,
then it will listen for you to say this. Now, this is a feature I will say that my wife loves to hate. Because it never works when I try to demonstrate it in front of her. And,
yep.
And at first, she just rolled her eyes and said, oh, this is ridiculous, another gadget. And then I keep saying, no, let's try this. Okay. And then I do it, and it comes back, and you ask for one thing, and you get something slightly different.
Yeah.
You know, it just misheard you. So she thinks it's more entertaining than not at this point.
Right. Well, my phone does it as well. I've turned off that feature because it does drain the battery.
Right.
But if I set out my phone and turn that on, it would listen all the time for OK Google, and it would pop right up, and I could ask it things. It's pretty good. And one of the nice things about Google is it's contextual, so you can ask follow-up questions. You can't do it any of the others.
Mm. Right. I was thinking about that.
I was going to say, because I do that on my smartphone. I can sit the bar across the top there. I just touch it on the microphone.
Yep.
It says listening, and I can tell it what to look up. And boom, it comes right out.
But so you can use things like pronouns then? So you could ask it, when is the next concert for insert band name here?
Yes.
And it will give you the date, and you say, make a note of that, or
yes.
put that on my
mm-hmm.
calendar. And,
yes.
And it knows what that means.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I can say, how old was, when was Abraham Lincoln born? When did he die? What was his wife's name?
Uh-huh.
What were their children's names?
That's an interesting advancement.
It really is. And they're all going to have it eventually. I'm not saying it's, you know, because whenever I do this, somebody, well, I have a student in one of my classes. One of the things that I was teaching was, you know, the advancements in AI.
Uh-huh.
So I was showing Google Plus because I had Google Plus. I mean, it wasn't, okay, Google.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't have anything to do with, this is better or worse. I happen to have an Android phone. I happen to have the Google, the Chrome browser on the computer I was using.
Uh-huh.
So I was showing that. And this guy, I saw him in, you know, in like the third row. Everything I did, he had his iPhone up to his mouth, making sure that Siri could do it too. So, of course, I had to make the Google thing do stuff that I know Siri
right.
can't do. Yet, it just made him angry, the whole thing. Eventually, I took pity on him. I started asking it things that I knew Siri was either as good or better at.
Mm.
So, but it was very funny.
Well, you know, he wanted to make sure that his investment was well protected.
And it is well protected. It's a great, Siri is a great product.
It's a great start. I think it's grown over the years, and I think the data that it has access to has grown as well, and that has allowed Siri to appear smarter as a product.
Right.
And I think it's going to be tough to compete against what Google has access to and what they have indexed. But that being said, I think both of those products are kind of walking along the same path in the same direction. I think they're both getting smarter. And this thing that you bring up about understanding the context of pronouns, of you, him, them, is an interesting advancement.
Right. And the one of the problems that Siri has right now is that Apple has hooked up with Wolfram.
Yes.
Wolfram Alpha.
Yep.
Which is great at some things like math.
Sure.
And really horrible at other things. And so until Wolfram gets better.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of stuff that Siri just can't do well yet.
Wolfram does a lot of things really well, but it also, their demos are kind of interesting. They'll say, tell me how much the United States spent in defense and put it in terms of the GDP of France.
It's like, right.
Like, okay, yes, it can look up both of those things and do the division and spit out a result. But we're trying to find interesting ways that can be useful in everyday
actually
life.
Useful.
Right. And
right.
And we're I'm anxiously awaiting the next big thing where we can make use
right.
of that.
Right. Right. And the big difference, of course, between Google Now and Siri is that Google's been gathering information for so much longer.
Right.
And has been they have whole divisions that do nothing but figure out how to go find those data and relate those data to other data.
Yes. They're very good at organizing data.
They're far ahead in that.
And for years, well, it was a while ago now, they had the Google 411 service where you could literally dial 1-800-GOOG-411 and ask it a question.
Yep.
And it would go and respond back with the top, you know, Google results.
Right. And they still do that. It's just called Google Now.
Google Now, right. And they were doing the Goog 411 because they wanted to get better at voice recognition. They wanted that dictation component
yep.
to work really well. And they wanted it to be tested against people with different accents, people with different ages, different genders. They wanted to make sure that it was a broad product that delivered a lot of value to many different kinds of people.
Right, right. And they also did that with Google Voice.
Mm-hmm. That's
where
true.
Where you could, you know, get a transcript of a voice message.
Right.
And you could correct it.
Ah.
So they essentially crowdsourced.
I remember this now.
Fixing their engine.
Right.
What a brilliant idea.
Yes. Yes.
And people many people were willing to do it. Exactly.
Many hands make light work.
Exactly. and that's another reason they're so far ahead. in voice recognition because a million people helped train their engine.
Yes.
Both train it by using their voice and correct
and
it.
And enhance it.
Right, enhance it by correcting the thing. Yeah. Very, very clever of Google. Whenever you can crowdsource something, do it. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi, guys. I don't know if Steve is there or not, but I have two questions. One, what happened to the October 25th podcast? I keep getting the download error.
I'm not sure. Steve is not here.
But he probably is listening.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he'll message us and let us know.
Okay, the
what
other
the
question
other
is, I've got an iPod Touch, and up until maybe 4 months ago, I could buy audiobooks and download it to my iTouch.
Okay.
Well, I bought a book, James Patterson's, you know, the latest book.
Uh-huh.
Bought it and downloaded it. Can't find it on my iTouch. It's not even on my computer. What happened to it?
Did you get any sort of error message like the download was interrupted?
No, it said download complete.
Okay. Did you get an email with
it? But it's not on my iTouch and it's not on my computer.
Typically, when you buy something, even something that might be free from the iTunes Music Store, you'll get a receipt a day or two later.
Nope, I never even got that. But when I went in to, I thought, well, maybe I didn't purchase it. And it says, do you want to buy this again? And I said, no, but it's nowhere to be found.
Based on the evidence that you told me you didn't get a receipt, I wonder if the purchase ever truly completed.
Well, I went to buy it again, and it's asking me to buy it again. It says, already downloaded. Do you want to buy this again? I go, well, no, I already purchased it once. It says I purchased it, but yet again, it hasn't taken the money out of my iTunes card. So I don't understand that.
Well, if they haven't taken the money, then it sounds like the transaction didn't happen yet.
Yeah. Or she could have been spoofed.
No, what's that? No, because the money would have been taken out.
No, what I'm saying is, was it a legit site where she went?
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
I went into the iTunes store, and I like audiobooks.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it's real because nobody took any money from you. What it sounds like happened was they said, all right, Linda just bought this. We'll credit it to her. Now we'll download it to her. Then we'll take our money. And that download actually got interrupted. So you've been, as far as Apple is concerned, you bought the book, because that's the first thing they do is say, Linda bought this book.
Uh-huh.
But then when the second thing was download, it didn't happen. And therefore, the third thing, which was actually take your money, didn't happen.
So should I call? But usually when I call Apple support, I could say, you know, here's the receipt number. I don't even have that. So, you know.
Well, what I would do is I would call them and say, look, there's two things, one of two things you can do.
Okay.
You can just buy it again because nobody took your money the first time, so it's not like you lost anything.
Right, right.
Or you can call them and explain this to them and see what they find at their end because they've got all the logs and all the other stuff that's required for that.
Yeah. But that is so weird.
Yeah, that is weird. It is very weird, and it really usually doesn't happen. I mean, I know people who buy stuff constantly from iTunes. They never have an issue. But
I just bought a TV series. Had no problem.
Yep. Every once in a while, and it may not even be Apple's fault, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going through about 50 or 100 different routers to get to Apple and back.
For the past 6 months, though, it has been happening. I had to call them to tell them the things that I had bought before all of a sudden disappeared, and they credited me back, but I can't even prove that I ever bought this. It's like, okay,
right, but again, don't forget they did not in fact take your money.
Yeah.
So really, if the transaction got interrupted, then no harm, no foul, because they never took money from you.
The way to check this out would be in iTunes to go to the purchase list.
You would not believe what's going on with me. I have to have hip replacement surgery.
Oh, my heavens. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. So, normally I wouldn't be home, so I thought, well, I'm going to call the guys and let them know what's going on.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. Yeah, I will call Apple and find out what's going on.
Excellent. Good luck with that.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Linda. All right. I believe we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And by the way, before we go too much farther, our first caller, Andy from Greece, was asking about Chromebooks, and I should probably point out that I wrote a book about Chromebooks.
What?
It's available in the Kindle. It's available for the Kindle and at Amazon.
Okay.
It's called "I Just Bought a Chromebook. Help."
Okay.
Whoa.
How much would I expect to pay for such a thing?
You would expect to pay hundreds of dollars for that book.
Usually,
but only today.
Every day
only. It's 99 cents
for a guy like me.
99 cents for you.
Oh, what a deal!
It's a deal. So I think...
How are the sales going?
Actually, pretty well.
Yeah? Been out for what, a few weeks?
It's been out for about a month and a half.
Oh, okay.
And I've sold a decent number. I'm not retiring on it.
Okay.
By any means.
You're already retired.
But I'm already retired.
More than a dozen? You sold more than a dozen?
Way more than a dozen.
Have you sold enough to buy a pizza?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
then
I have.
That's your first level of success, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes, it is my first level of success.
Yeah, it was a small
and
one.
I only get a
small pizza.
And I only get a tiny piece of that 99 cents, too, but I can still buy
personal
a pizza.
Personal pan pizza.
I can buy a personal pan pizza.
Just buy the slice, really. Single topping.
I can buy a slice in New York
but
where
still.
They're only a dollar. Yeah. Probably not a dollar anymore. I haven't been in New York in a long time.
It's none of those name brand pizzas.
Right. But
some of those frozen pizzas.
Yeah.
Yeah, DiGiorno.
Right. DiGiorno's, yeah. I've actually got two books. I wrote one called Google Docs, Word Processing in the Cloud.
Right.
And the other one is I Just Bought a Chromebook, Help. And each of them is only 99 cents. I'm writing a third, but that's going a little slowly right now. So
we can find that on Amazon?
You will find those on Amazon. You can search for me as the author, Nick Francesco.
Good.
And it will show you both of the books I've written.
Well, fun.
So I'm very pleased. I've had a couple people have actually...
Have they interacted with you or after the
well,
after the sale?
Written reviews.
Oh.
And they were very complimentary. So
well, that's nice.
I'm very pleased.
I'd like to check that out.
You should check that out. They're good. They're magnificent, actually, books.
My daughter was asking me about Chromebooks earlier this week. She was thinking, because what I've learned is that the high school she goes to is actually handing out Chromebooks for class periods, not like a one-to-one deployment to students or anything, but they're making them available, and they hand in their homework in this particular class through Google Docs. The teacher looks it over and reads it, and there's very little paper involved anymore.
Yep.
So there's not a lot of printers, not a lot of toner, not a lot of inkjets.
Well, she really will then, I think, benefit from the second book, which shows you how to do research inside Google Docs.
Ah.
You highlight a word, hit control. I shouldn't give this away. Hit control R, and you can actually do research. It will then allow you, with another click of a button, to put the site in as a CITE
yes.
site. As a yeah, you can do
a
AMA.
Citation.
You can do all you know.
Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think you might have shown me that before, and it was right after
cool.
you showed me that we had parents' night at her school, and I showed that to the teachers there.
Oh,
and
very
the jaws
nice.
Hit the floor.
Yes. Yes.
They were very excited about this.
It's a very cool thing.
Neat.
A very cool thing. So,
well, we'll talk Chromebooks later.
We'll talk Chromebooks later, and everybody should buy my two books. All right. Am I allowed to say that? Sure. Why not?
Well, it's not like they shouldn't buy your two books.
Right. Well, it's like for Google. You can't say to people, particularly over the air, please go click on my ads. They frown on that.
Mm.
I don't think Amazon cares if you... I mean, they want you to publicize your books, right? Okay. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Scott from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott. What's up?
Okay. You just put the fear of Odin into me. I'm sitting here... looking at my iMac, and on it, everything is in the admin account.
Uh-huh.
And so what I want to do is transfer transfer everything into a new account,
right?
Not the admin account.
Folders,
etc. Can I do that?
Yes. Yes, you can.
And do I have to transfer the program as well?
No, you do not. So I can walk you through this, at least the general steps. So inside your home folder, do you know how to find your home folder on your iMac?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Your home folder lives inside a folder called Users. So inside Users,
yes,
there's a folder just for you. You can go to the Apple menu, to System Preferences, and then to Accounts, and create a second user. And you can define whether or not it's a what we call a standard user or an admin user. So once you've got...
And, of course, you want standard.
In this case, your second account ought to be a standard.
I have two users now.
Okay. Yeah. So inside that folder that we were talking about, the one where your home folder lives called Users, there's another folder that you get there for free, and it's called Shared. And Shared is kind of the common area where all the different user accounts can put things so that each other can make use of them. So this is the place that's going to be the destination where you're going to copy the things you want to live in that standard user account. With me so far?
Okay. All right.
So it's kind of a two-step process. One is to make that standard user account. But before you log in as that standard user, copy the things that you care about into that /users/shared folder.
Oh.
Then
the programs, so the apps?
Just your documents. Your documents, your music, your videos, the things like that can all go live in users shared. And then...
From the user name folder they're in now to user shared.
Correct.
I see.
Right.
Right. So then you'll go and make that standard user account. You'll log out of your administrative user account. Log in as that standard user account. Now you're protected against privilege escalation vulnerabilities, like Nick was talking about earlier. And if you go and look in that user shared account, you'll still have access to all the things that you placed in there.
And if you want, you could copy those to your new...
standard user account folders,
like the
documents folder or the pictures folder. So that user shared account, that's the halfway point between the two. That's kind of the common area that all the different user accounts can get access to. And that's the unique tool that makes life easier when you're trying to move things between accounts.
And once you've moved them, you can take them out of shared again.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh.
Perfect.
Oh, I see. So I'm sorry. I moved into shared, then I moved into the new account.
Right.
That's right. Right. Yep. So from your admin account, you're going to push them into shared, and then you're going to log out of that admin account, log in as the standard user that you made, and then you're going to pull them from shared into your new standard accounts home folder. So it's kind of a two-step process there.
This is not any application. This is
only the data,
the word
processing, right? Documents, things that you've produced. This is not
documents, pictures, music.
Right. Things like that.
Right.
Not things like Microsoft Office or iPhoto or things of that nature.
You will still be able to
install permissions on the new account?
No, and that's the beautiful thing. The new account cannot install software.
Oh.
And that's
okay.
And that's on purpose.
That's the whole point of this, so that if some sort of virus gets in, it also cannot install stuff.
Okay.
So what you do because, you know, mostly we use our computers, once in a while we install something. So when you install something, you log out as the standard user, log in as the admin user, do your installation.
Oh, it's even easier than that on the Mac. When you install software on the Mac, it prompts you for a username and password. You could live inside your standard user account all day long. If you needed to install software, the installer will prompt you for a username and password. And as long as you're confident that it's a legitimate piece of software that you do intend to install, you just give it the credentials. You give it the username and password of that administrative user. And then it will proceed to install, and you don't have to log out.
Nice.
It's very straightforward when it comes to installing things after the fact.
And I like that I don't have to log out.
That's
but
right.
I still have access to the same program, new program, in my in my other new account.
That's right. In your standard account, you'll have access to all the same applications that you would from any other account.
And would it be safe to delete all my documents from my... I don't know if I have enough space to put all my documents and have them in two places.
You could do that. I always think twice before I recommend to people that they delete data because I'm Mr. Backup. I love having additional copies of things in additional places.
My suggestion is you make sure you have an extra backup
before you do any of this.
Before you do anything.
I have this time. What is it called?
Probably a time capsule.
Time machine.
I have a time capsule.
Okay.
So
make sure
now,
that that's up to
date. Let me ask you
up to
about
date.
That. Do
sure.
I have to do any changes with that once I make this process happen?
You don't. Time Capsule is system-wide. It looks for new files that have been either added or changed and then writes a copy of those to your Time Capsule. The drives inside a Time Capsule are pretty big, and they will be able to handle additional copies of information with no problem.
Will it know that I've done this change?
Yes, it will know that.
Automatic. I don't have to tell it anything.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, you've been wonderful in this help. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Good luck. Have fun. And that's really kind of a beautiful thing, reminding people that they should never be the administrator when they're working. Linux works the same way because if I want to do something that could potentially be dumb, it asks me for root password. And,
yes.
And having to type that in then reminds me that that I'm about to do something potentially dumb.
Right.
And I should be very careful.
It grabs you by the shoulder and says, hey.
Right. And same way on the Mac.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
All right, back to the phones. We've got just a few minutes to talk to Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Yes, I'd like to make a comment, if you guys would allow me to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Something. You've mentioned how Windows 8 is not sold very well. People don't like that.
Correct.
I'd like to say that, for me, I'd criticize Windows, or even maybe, I haven't used an Apple since my college days, but probably the same thing with their operating system. Why is it that they do not allow people to just upgrade older operating systems and charge them like $100 and try to get them as efficient as they can on the internet and up to date so that we have some kind of backup support so you could use more updated software that you might be using? I don't like the latest and greatest. I love doing artwork on my computers. I got old desktops that still have XP on them, and I love XP. I've invested hundreds of dollars on books like Windows XP Inside Out, upgrading and things like that, and I try to get that running efficiently so I can do creative artwork, and I design websites. I got like a 150-page website I designed using just Notepad.
Okay, Steve, we've only got a minute or two left.
Now,
if you want us to answer your question, then you got
to
let us talk.
Okay,
thanks. Here's the deal. As time goes on, operating systems get more and more powerful, which means they need more and more powerful machines. There comes a point where a company decides that updating an old machine with a new operating system means you're going to have a very poor experience on that old machine. It's going to run very slowly, and things just aren't going to work well at all. And they don't want that. They don't want you to have a bad experience. So there comes a point at which they just say, you know what? We're not updating this operating system anymore. And when you go to install a fresh operating system, over it, the thing comes out and says, I'm sorry, you can't do that. It's just not good enough a machine. Not enough RAM, not enough power, not enough anything.
Right. Now, okay, I understand that part, but the thing is, like, I've seen my income fall by about 40% of what I made 10 years ago, and I made these investments, and I'd like to just keep using these, but I'd love the latest software. Here's the question I have, though. On this older XP, I mean, running like Pentiums and Pentium D and that older stuff.
Yep.
I'd like to upgrade somehow through my hardware, either through a PCI Express slot or possibly externally through a USB 2 slot. Is there any way I could find some hardware accessory to upgrade to a USB 3?
thing that is, though, is, all right, you can add a card on, okay? And you can change it at that end, but the interior guts of the motherboard and everything else and the way it processes it still isn't going to change. It's still the original processor and motherboard that's handling all that. So, you know, you're just jamming the, you know, putting the ice block somewhere else. You're
basically
just jamming it somewhere else at another point in the system.
It's like you've got a 2-inch hose.
Yeah.
You stick a coupler on it and put an 8-inch hose. You still only get as much water as a 2-inch hose will throw through.
So you won't get any improvement as far as speed on backups?
Nope.
No.
Sorry.
No. Okay. All right. Thanks for that information. Another question I might have.
No, we got to take a break. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's top of the hour. This is a hard break. We got to go. Thanks. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Nick Francesco, and you 59 minutes after the hour. Soundbites.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get back to the phones, Dennis has a follow-up from our first hour.
Yeah. So we've got some real-time follow-up from people who have let me know from across the internet some things that that we might be interested in. So Linda called earlier, and she was having issues with iTunes. She was buying some electronic books, some audiobooks, I believe they were. And she can go to... she wasn't sure if the transaction was completing. In iTunes, if they were audiobooks, you can go to the store menu, and you can choose View Account, and that will be your Apple ID that you are using to purchase things from the iTunes store. And when you click the View Account, you can ask iTunes to show you all your previous purchases. If you do that, you might see a line item for the audiobook that you were buying. And that would be one way to verify if the transaction really happened. If it did happen, they'll also outline what the price was for the book. So that's one way to figure out what's up. We also had a question from, I believe it was Scott earlier, related to administrative accounts and standard accounts. We've got some real-time follow-up that another simpler way, rather than moving things into the shared folder, would be to go and create a second administrative account, then log out of the one that you're in, log into that newly created administrative account, and then change your first account back to a standard user. Then you can log back in as your regular user. All your documents, your movies, your music, your bookmarks will all be there and ready. You don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to move your files into that shared folder. And you can continue on as you were. When it's time to install software, you just use the username and password from that newly created administrative account. But other than having that account around, you don't ever touch it.
That's very clever, actually.
So thank you for everybody who provided the follow-up there. We really appreciate that.
All right. Thanks. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Art from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Art. What's up?
Oh, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm running Windows 7 on an HP Slimline. It's about 4 years old. And this problem started about 3-4 weeks ago with a DLL host EXE32. Does that sound familiar? Where
you
kind of take over your hard drive. But that's what that morphed into was I did a system recovery. Burned two disks, and I went through HP's recovery regimen, but now it doesn't seem to want to open the .wim files. It, like, flashes for a half a second, and the window opens and closes, so I can't, access my various things I had on there, pictures and favorites and some documents and whatnot. Am I screwed here?
.im?
Dot W-I-M.
Oh, W-I-M.
Yes.
WIM.
Yep.
Those are Windows image format files.
Okay.
That is that disk image format. So I'm not entirely certain. Did the restore happen okay?
Yeah, it seemed to. Pretty much, except now I can't like open this stuff up. You know, I did their follow up on the shortcut to system recovery files, and just can't. You know, doesn't want to open those. I mean, it goes to open them.
All right. Two things.
Uh-huh.
What program did you use to create the WIM files?
I believe it was whatever, Hewlett-Packard, their system recovery.
Right.
So, you know, HP support.
What version of Windows?
Seven.
Seven, yeah.
What it's... the HP software recovery, generally what that does is that pulls an image of the system the way it looked on day one.
Oh, I see.
Off of the hard drive.
Uh-huh.
But if you created these .wim files, you use some other piece of software to do that.
Huh. Okay.
And that's the program you should also use to put them back.
Yeah, right. The recovery manager program.
Find that out?
Yeah, that would be the recovery manager.
Yeah, recoverymanager.exe. There's actually should be two files in that folder with the WIM files. One is the recoverymanager.exe and the recoverymanager.ini.
Okay, yeah, the exe. It doesn't say exe until you go into properties.
Right, right, right.
But it's got the symbol is a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah, it looks...
Yeah, that's what I'm in, and it's... go to open it, flashes, and it doesn't say anything like you're using the wrong program to open it.
Is the configuration file in there, the INI?
I guess so, yes.
Okay.
The other one.
Okay, so you open INI. That up,
yeah.
and then you click the... is there like an open button or a file open to open the WIM file?
Yes.
And then there should be some extract button or something else that says extract WIM file? And that's where the error comes in? Or?
No, it's says open or, you know, save. You know, the next box is save.
Right, so you open it up.
Save, and you just hit the open, and it just... A large window flashes for a half a second, but it closes right away. So it's so fast, I can't even see what it is. It's like it wants to open, but it closes immediately.
And there's no error message or anything else?
No.
So he's trying to restore it? Because on here it says once you get into the Recovery Manager folder,
mm-hmm.
you click on the program, the Recovery Manager Restore program opens, you click Next.
Mm-hmm.
Select the type of files that you want to restore. You click Next. A message displays showing the location of the files to be restored.
A desktop. So, had them sent to the desktop.
So but does it point to that folder on the desktop?
Good question.
See, that's what it's got to do because it'll open it up. The message displaying shows the location of which the files will be restored. Like in this example, they show is /system recovery files.
Mm-hmm.
Allow the program to restore the backup files.
Yeah, should they be like somewhere else in the C drive?
No, you've got them on CD, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What it sounds like is you've done two separate things. One of them not so good, one of them terrific.
Oh, okay.
The terrific thing was you actually copied those WIM files. You actually created the WIM files and put them on CDs.
Yes.
Excellent.
Oh, thank you.
The
other to the terrible thing.
Well, not terrible, just not so great, is you used HP System Recovery.
Okay.
Which basically just... As I said, sets your Windows system back to day one.
Oh, right, right.
Like you just pulled it out of the box.
Right. So what you need to do is figure out what program you use to create those WIM files.
Oh, okay, the two disks.
Right.
To begin with.
And
oh,
use that program to restore.
Oh, okay. All right. I will work on that.
Yeah, now, theoretically, it's the Windows Restore program, but I don't know that.
Right, yeah, I might have made a boo-boo or used something.
Well, but whatever you use, that's the thing you whatever you use to create it, that's the program you should use to restore it.
Right.
Once you get that matched up, I think you're going to be all set.
Yeah.
Okay, and then is there any way of telling that easily?
Well, no, you'd have to know what programs you had bought and used.
Okay. Yeah, there's a short list there.
Right, right, right. And so, I would start with the Windows Recovery Program.
Right. Maybe I used that instead of the HP.
Exactly.
Right. That's the most likely option.
That is the most likely option. And so, start with that.
All right.
Okie doke.
Oh, well, thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Good luck.
You take care. Yep.
Yep. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's an issue that many people have. Actually, he's lucky because Windows 7, the recovery program, actually works pretty well. Up until Windows 7, the backup program has always worked. Restore worked very badly.
Oh, nice.
If at all. But in Windows 7, it actually works pretty well. So he should be able to do it. Theoretically. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
Hello, Mark.
What can we do for you?
Your opinion, have you heard or had any experience with WebRoot Internet Security?
I have not. Sorry.
Okay. The reason why I ask is because my son started college this fall.
Oh, congratulations.
And, we recently had to go buy him a laptop.
And now you're poor.
Actually, he got a lot of assistance, so it didn't cost us a whole lot.
Cool. Okay,
which was nice.
Good for him.
And when we bought it at Best Buy, they said this particular computer comes with 1 year of free internet security, and you got to pick from a list. And of course, I didn't touch Norton or McAfee, but I had read a little bit about the WebRoot product, so it came with three licenses. So we got that for free and installed it for him. Then I installed it on my computer, which was using Avast.
Right.
And I'll tell you, when I installed this software, my computer got immensely faster than it has ever been before. My boot up time is phenomenal now. It did find a ton of nasties that the Security Tango didn't find.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the program runs in the cloud.
Yeah.
It does not do virus definition updates. It runs totally different than any of these other programs do. And so far, my experience has been wonderful. And I cannot believe how fast that computer boots.
Nice.
What was it again?
WebRoot.
Internet Security.
Hmm. Yeah, PCWorld.com has a nice review of it here.
So does
I'm scanning through.
So does PCMag.com.
Oh, yeah?
And I did, when I was out shopping around for other things for him, I was in Walmart, and I noticed Walmart sells it for $49.99 for five devices.
Well, there you go.
For a year?
Including portable devices.
Okay.
So I was just, that's why I was wondering if you had any experience with it, because so far my experience has been wonderful.
No, thank you. We'll be looking into this.
The review here says that WebRoot's protection may be not top notch, but it's a speedy program with little effect on performance. It only added half a second to startup time compared to a PC with no antivirus installed and 3 seconds to shutdown time. It has the fastest scan time of all the 2013 suites they tested. For both on-demand scans at 58 seconds and on-access scans at 2 minutes, 10 seconds. So it sounds like performance is really a hallmark of WebRoot. I encourage people to Google WebRoot and PC World or PC Mag and read the review there about how effective it was. It looks like it's very effective in some things and less effective in others. But it seems to be well-regarded in general.
Good reason to use it within the Security Tango, which is what I do.
Yep, you want to keep yourself protected from a number of different a number of different angles, and one single tool is folly. I wouldn't recommend using only one tool.
Another unique thing about it is it has a one-way firewall. What it does is it allows Windows Firewall to handle the incoming, and it handles the outgoing on the web root end.
Oh, interesting.
Which I find to be very efficient also, because it's a lot faster than a one-program, two-way firewall.
Right.
So I just wanted to give you a heads up about it, and maybe you'll find some experience with it. You know?
Perfect.
We'll read some reviews about this and see what
we can do.
We'll check it out, absolutely.
That is pretty neat.
Yeah, it really is. There's some, there's a bunch of stuff out there, and you know, who knows? We can't find everything, but we're very pleased when our users come in and remind us of something that would be useful,
right?
Or an alternative to something else. And WebRoot looks pretty good. For a while, I was playing with Panda. That's another through the cloud. Thing. Mm-hmm. It was also very nice.
So these cloud services, that's a very different approach to antivirus. Typically, you'd have an antivirus engine that would live on your computer, and then you'd tell it to either scan at a particular time of day or to scan every file as it's being accessed, which would add a lot of load.
Right.
So we should probably talk about what makes the cloud approach different.
We will when we come back, but we are going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Wurster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Wurster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
Still.
Can you believe that?
And we were talking
about 25 years.
Yep. I should probably read this next news item. A Virginia. Okay. Now, this is only in Virginia right now, but it sets a precedent, as you may know, for the rest of the country. So, a Virginia Circuit Court judge ruled on Thursday that a person does not need to provide a passcode to unlock their phone for the police. The court also ruled that demanding a suspect to provide a fingerprint to unlock a phone would be constitutional.
Okay, so if you've got a PIN code on your phone or some password to unlock the phone, they cannot ask you for it. However, if you've got Touch ID on your iPhone, they can say, put your finger here, please.
Yep.
Really?
And you are required to comply with that?
Yep.
According to the law?
Yep. The ruling calls into question the privacy of some cell phone users who have models equipped with a fingerprint sensor that allows the user, and ideally only the user, to unlock the phone. It is possible for users to turn fingerprint unlocking off and simply use a passcode. But if a suspect simply uses a fingerprint to open their phone, police could have a window to take advantage of that when apprehending them. The case in question this week involved a man named David Boust, who was charged in February with trying to strangle his girlfriend. The Virginia Pilot reports that Boust's phone might contain video of the conflict, but that his phone was locked with a passcode. Boust's attorney argued that the passcodes are protected by the Fifth Amendment. The judge agreed with Boust, though he noted in his written opinion that giving police a fingerprint is akin to providing a DNA or handwriting sample or an actual key, which the law permits. A passcode, though, requires the defendant to divulge knowledge, which the law protects against. The ruling is interesting because it draws into relief the legal difference between a person's identity and their knowledge. The Fifth Amendment protects people from being forced to witness against themselves, but fingerprints, it seems, may not have the same protection as passcodes. So, do you use a fingerprint to unlock your phone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
What we need is a way for you to give your device a different fingerprint than the one you typically use. Like, let's say you usually use your thumb. Instead, you give it your left pinky. And then the phone needs to know, when I give you my left pinky, that means completely destroy everything that's on this phone. Wipe it out.
But it's an awfully interesting idea that... And it really goes back to what we've been saying.
Security and convenience.
Security versus convenience. It's it's clearly more convenient to do nothing. But it's, you know, in level of convenience, do nothing, use a fingerprint, use a passcode.
Talk to a lawyer first.
Right, right. None of us are lawyers.
And no. We don't play them on the radio.
No, nope. We don't play them on television anymore. So, but the big thing is apparently, at least in Virginia, and again, it sets a precedent.
Mm-hmm. Who you are and what you know are two separate things.
Are two separate things. So they can force you to unlock your phone with a fingerprint.
Right.
But not with a passcode.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because what you are is different than than what you know.
Yeah.
And what you know can unlock the phone. And these days, what you are can also unlock the phone.
Right.
But from... So I guess we either need to...
And what you know is protected by the Fifth Amendment.
Hmm.
What you are is not. That.
So it's the fact that the phone knows what the fingerprint is that's the problem.
Well, it's the fact that it is your fingerprint.
If corporations can be people, can we just declare that phones are people too? And that you can't compel the phone to give out information about you?
That would be lovely.
We just do an end run.
Right, right, right. But as it, apparently, so you, if you lock your phone with a passcode,
yeah.
And I suppose that also
you
means
also
with
both.
A pattern.
Yeah.
I don't know of a phone that lets you do both.
I'm guessing. But I want to find out.
I don't know of a phone that does that. But, all right.
Like
anyway.
Two-factor.
Yep. Yep.
That'd be something, though, if you could put in a code and then the fingerprint.
Or the other way around.
No, because then that way they see a passcode that they can't get out of you. So.
Well, you got to get through both in order to get to the data.
Right. So they can't. Right. In either direction, it doesn't matter. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Afternoon, gentlemen. I'm responding to questioning your comments earlier about setting up a user account.
Yes.
I think I'm probably stuck in the situation of having only an administrator account.
You and almost everybody else.
It's not just you.
So I'm running Windows 7.
Okay.
Which is different than exactly what you responded to. So
I wonder
if the techniques would also apply to Windows 7.
Yes, broadly, accounts
and so forth.
Broadly, yes, it would work exactly the same way. The basic point here is you create a set. Well, and let's make it even simpler, as Dennis said later.
Right.
You start with the account you've got now, which is an admin account, right? You create a new admin account and call it something else.
Yes.
Which you can do through your current account. Right?
Yes.
Right. Then you log out of your current account, log into the new account, and because that is also an admin account, you now tell it that your old account is no longer an admin account. It's just a standard user. Then you log out of the admin account, log back into your original account, which is now a standard user. You've got all your stuff still there, and now you're a standard user, so you're more protected.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I was particularly worried about I use Outlook, and I was particularly worried about it starting new PST accounts all over again.
Yep, and now you don't have to worry about that.
I don't need to worry about that. Okay, now the other interesting thing I found out was I went into the user accounts area off the control panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I opened up choose the account I would like to change. And so what comes up is the basic administrator account, the guest account, which is off right now, and another account, which is ASP.NET machine account.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
you can ignore that account.
User and password protected.
Right. You can ignore that account. That is used internally by the system to do some back-end maintenance type stuff.
So I shouldn't touch it.
You should not touch it. The typical thing is anytime you find an account that you don't know,
leave it.
Don't touch it.
Okay, well, it says it's password protected, so I don't know where the password comes from.
Right. It's built in. It's added automatically, so I wouldn't play with it at all.
Okay, so it's not a bad thing.
Correct.
No, it's a good thing, actually.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, I guess that's it then. I want to experiment with changing over and setting up a user account. I recommended that to anybody I talked to, but I've never done it myself.
Right, right, right.
Well, time to give it a
Here's
shot.
Here's your chance.
Because I do tend to download a lot of programs through my email accounts.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it looks like I won't be able to do that without logging out and then logging back in as a master account again, right?
You can download them. You can't install them. When you go to install them, actually you can. When you go to install them, it will then say, oh, you must be an administrator. Provide a username and password of an administrator.
Okay, so I download it into, in this case, usually Firefox. And then I go to the download file and double-click that, and it'll say you can't do it.
Right. You can usually right-click that and choose Run as Administrator.
Okay. Okay.
And then it will prompt you for credentials.
All right. I was just afraid I might lose a lot of stuff, but you've convinced me, I guess, that I will not.
You should not, no.
We always recommend having good backups, so make sure your backups are up to date, and then play with user accounts.
I do back up on a weekly basis. The interesting thing is, if you have another minute, on the backup, I use the Windows backup and restore.
Yes.
And sometimes it does it in maybe an hour, mm-hmm. and sometimes it takes 4 or 5 hours. And I don't know whether updates the total image every now and then, and sometimes updates just the changes.
Did you set up this backup, or did it come set up for you?
Well, I don't remember right now.
Right. Here's the deal. There are two ways you can do a backup. There are a dozen ways, but there are two basic ways you can do a backup. A full backup or an incremental backup.
Right.
A full backup is what it sounds like. It's everything. An incremental backup is a backup that of only the stuff that's changed since your last backup.
Right.
So
yeah. Okay, it looks at just
that.
Dates.
It creates a different file for just the incremental backup.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so what you would have to do is, if you had an incremental backup, it depends on what it is you're restoring. If you're saying to yourself, oh, heck, I made a mistake. I want to go back to that one file. Just restore yesterday's incremental backup, and it'll be back again.
Right.
But if you want to restore the entire disk, you've got to restore the full backup and then all the additional incremental backups, because those are changes.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
According to the backup, it looks like I only get one file as a backup. I forget the name of it.
Yeah. Well, without knowing how it was set up, I can't tell you exactly what you've got.
Yeah. Okay, I just wonder if it changes between what I suggested. Why sometimes does it take so long and other times it's kind of short?
It's hard for us to know.
Right, yeah. But it is likely that it's a full backup and then incrementals.
Beg your pardon?
It is likely that it is a full backup when it takes a long time and then incrementals when it takes a short time.
Yeah, but does it make its own decisions when to do that?
They do not, but if you can't remember who set it up or if you set it up, whoever originally set it up probably said, you know, like a full backup once a week and then incrementals or once a month.
What they could have done is say in a schedule, say you do it every Friday. They could have said, okay, the first 3 weeks, do incremental. At the end of the month, the fourth week, do a full.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set that up in a schedule. So that's why you're maybe seeing a pattern that every so often it's just doing it short, and then another time it takes long. It's been set up that way, like Nick was saying, in the schedule. You can have full control of that.
I guess I need to try to find the schedule somewhere.
Yes, it's in the program.
That's right. a good next step.
And it depends on what program you used. And obviously we can't help you with that. I'm sorry.
Well, the program is Windows Backup and Restore, which is part of Windows 7.
Oh, well, and if that's the program you're using, then you can set up automatic backups, and you do that from the control panel,
mm-hmm.
System and Maintenance, Backup and Restore Center.
And that should allow you to see the schedule that that's
and you should be able to see operating. The schedule you set, exactly.
Let's see, control panel system, system and maintenance. I don't see system and maintenance. I have control panel and system.
He's probably got them set as icons.
Yeah. All right. In Windows 7. Yeah.
Looking at the Windows 7 control panel.
Control panel, system and maintenance, or just system or maintenance? I mean, it's in there. It's in there somewhere. You may not be seeing everything. Windows 7 can have six or eight different looks to it. But it's somewhere in the control panel, somewhere under system and maintenance. There is backup and restore. You could simply look up because there should be a search bar somewhere, a little box that has a magnifying glass in it.
Yeah, at the top of the control panel.
Then just put the word backup in there and hit enter.
Okay. Well, okay. I don't want to take any more of your time.
Nope.
Thanks for the confirmation on changing over.
Yep.
Sure.
To the user account.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was great.
Yeah, it was.
It gives him something to do for the rest of the afternoon.
Well, you know, it's
that's
a nice,
exactly
cool
right.
fall afternoon. Why not?
Why
fall,
not?
It's gone right to winter. Heck with fall.
I want to believe, man. I want to believe.
Exactly.
I was out there yesterday where I work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it started sleeting.
Yeah.
In the
grapple.
Snow.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no!
And I was like, well, it'll be like this till May.
It's too early.
Yep. It's grapple.
Well, we've gotten
I refuse to use
the S word.
Yeah.
The four-letter S word?
Yeah. We don't want the four-letter S word. So I'm calling it grapple, which is a light, hail-like S word.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it hurt.
Yeah, we had that the other day. It was kind of a thick rain.
Yeah.
It's grapple.
Rain. Not nice, and it just reminds me that it's coming too soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all tend to spell it G-R-O-P-P-L-E, but it's actually spelled G-R-A-U-P-E-L.
Okay. Is that Dutch?
The hell knows.
I don't know. Hmm. Okay. Grapple. There's my word of the day.
Yeah, it's a sleet and hail mix.
Okay.
Kind of. All right, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Tesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have John from Shalott on the line. Welcome, John. What's up?
Hi, how you doing? I got a bunch of files on an external hard drive that are from the Hotfix installer, and I can't get them off. It says cannot delete EULA.
Okay.
From the what installer?
Hotfix installer.
Yeah.
So you put a hotfix on an external drive and then tried to run it? Is that what happened?
No, I must have got the hotfix and it jumped over. I must have had this hard drive hooked up while I was getting updates, and I don't know why they jumped over to this external hard drive, but I have like 20 of them, you know, with the letters and numbers. And then you go into them, and there's more numbered files. And then you go down to those, and then it's an EULA rich text document, and then a hotfix installer UI. Looks like a
Right.
It sounds like Microsoft Windows Update grabbed your software updates, or maybe you downloaded them from Microsoft's website independently and may have accidentally downloaded them to your external drive rather than your internal drive.
Yeah.
An EULA is an end user license agreement. It is the boilerplate legalese that you agree to when you run a particular.
That's the stuff you never read when you install something.
Yeah, it's when you scroll all the way down to the bottom and then click agree.
Yeah.
Right.
In general, it sounds like you're trying to delete the files that are on this external drive.
Yes.
Okay. And what was the error that you were running into?
It says cannot access denied. Error deleting file. Access denied.
For all the files or just for the end user license agreements?
Yeah, it looks like it's just for the end user license.
Right.
Is there anything that you need on that drive?
No, this is...
Then why not just format
storage.
It? Format
Pardon?
It. You can format it. You're going to have to go into the...
Everything will stay on there that's on there?
No, nothing will stay on there.
No,
that's what he's
wiped.
Saying.
Yeah, it'll wipe it totally.
Here's the thing. The hot fixes are updates. You're exactly right. Dennis is exactly right. And if you are happy with those updates, you don't need those hot fix files anymore. They're really there if you decide to roll back. You say, I don't want that update. Let's go back to the old one. So you can delete them. If you're having trouble deleting them, it's one of two things. You're not the administrator, which means you no longer have the right to delete those files. Or those files have in some way been locked separately by another process. Do you regularly reboot your system? Or shut it down at night, for example?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then it's not locked accidentally through that. So what I would suggest you do is make sure you're the administrator, and then go to that file. You're on Windows 7?
No, I'm on XP.
Oh, no. Oh, heck.
Well, it's, with those files, if I took that external hard drive and went to another computer, would those files, can I delete them from another computer?
Maybe. What you should try to do is right-click on the file and see if it'll allow you to take ownership.
Okay.
Again, it might not work under XP, but it might work under 7 or 8. And if you
okay,
can...
I just right-click it, what, hit properties?
Yeah, if you can take ownership of the file, then you should be able to delete it once you're the owner.
So I would right click on the file and then
right,
and you then go to what?
It should properties? Say it should say take ownership.
Oh no, it just says open.
Yeah, because you're on XP, and I don't think it does that on XP. It's been a while since I've used XP.
Would these files do anything to anybody else's computer? Like, would they jump over to that computer?
No, they would not. In fact. The end user license agreements are actually pretty small. So if you can delete all the rest of the files in each of those folders, then all you really end up with is a bunch of little files on the disk that you can safely ignore.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much. I just wanted to get this clutter off of this.
No, I get it. See if you can move all of those folders into another folder called junk or hot fixes or some other thing. See if you can move them. You may not be able to delete them, but at least you get them out of sight. And if you can delete everything else in those folders, like I said, what you're left with is just a few little files on your disk.
Like the drivers? Can I delete the hot fix drivers too?
You can delete anything you want in a hot fix as long as you're sure, absolutely sure, that you're never going to go back to that version again.
Yes. Since it's XP, I'm just running on borrowed time anyways.
Yeah, and the reality is you're never going to be able to upgrade past that anymore anyway.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Yep. Great. Thanks for giving us a call.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, Windows leaves a lot of files around after a hot disk, hot fix upgrade.
And people don't understand quite how old Windows XP is. Windows XP is so old, it literally came out just a few weeks before 9/11 happened.
Yep.
It is almost, what, 13 years old?
13 years old, yeah. Yeah. And people still use it. And I get it. It works, and people have...
muscle memory,
of it, and,
yeah,
and they don't want to buy a new machine. I get all of that, but it is what it is. All right, our next caller is Jack from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
Yeah, I just got an email about there's this new program from Microsoft called Emmet. It's some kind of a program that scans for various malware.
Could you spell that? Could you spell that, please?
Emet.
Okay.
They're calling it Emmet 4.1. And I was just installing it, and I get a message saying that it's already being installed. And I check using Task Manager. There's nothing in the list that indicates that anything else is being installed.
There is a program called Emmet.
The Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Which is not... And it is designed to deploy and configure security mitigation stuff. So that's a legitimate program. But what you're saying is you're trying to install it, and it says it's already being installed?
Yes.
What it sounds like is you accidentally multiple clicked on it.
Well, I went back, and I canceled it, and then I did it again. I made sure to click just once. The message says another installation is in progress. You must complete that installation before continuing this one.
Okay, I tend to agree with Nick that maybe it was clicked twice. It's also important to notice that there are multiple versions of Emmet. Emmet has on its fifth release now. That was released on July 31st of 2014.
Right.
So you know,
happened is you started an install that did not finish.
Okay.
And now you're kind of stuck in limbo.
How would I eliminate that?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question.
What about a very good answer?
Well, we're Googling as quickly as we can.
Yeah, right. Here's the thing.
What version of Windows are you running?
Oh, man.
Windows 7.
Okay. Let's see. Do you have all your other Windows updates applied for this month?
Yeah, I do that regularly.
Okay, then it's most likely that you are installing Emmet 5.0, is that correct?
No, it's 4.1.
Okay.
4.1 update 1, that's what they call it.
Is there a number, an error number that you get, or just
no,
text?
Just got this, you know, generic dialog box, another installation is in progress, you must complete it.
Well, do we know that the other installation is of Emmet? Is it potentially of some other piece of software that you've attempted to install recently?
Again, I have gotten this message on another item. I think it might have been AVG, where I clicked on an update and I got the same message, a very similar message.
All right, I have a recommendation.
Go.
Okay, my recommendation, it's my standard consultant recommendation, is let's restart the computer and try it again and see if we get any different results.
Yeah, reboot. Because the memory's locked.
And if that doesn't do it, then what I would suggest you do is, and you really need to do this all in one session because you don't want to be unprotected for long,
right,
but I would uninstall every protection software you have.
Okay.
And then reinstall them again.
That will include AVG, malware, anti-spyware.
Yes.
All those,
yes.
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's why I say you really want to do it all in one shot.
Yeah, I'll have to reserve some time to do that.
Yeah, well, exactly. But
right. That's
I'm saying that may be that something is causing that issue.
Okay, thank you very much for the help.
Yep,
sure.
Good luck. Thanks
for calling.
Well, all right, that music tells me that we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, who managed to press some of the right buttons today, which was very impressive.
It was very nice.
And Dennis Worcester, who did a great job coming in to sub for Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, don't go away, because George is in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to push the buttons in the right order, which will be a nice change for today. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We'll see you in just 166 hours with a whole lot more sound bites on the longest-running computer show in the known universe on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.